Hi, Scott Simon here, talking with Daniel Pinkwater.
Hi, Scott.
Hi there, Daniel. I've enjoyed reading the book, but I can't pronounce it.
The Yggsey.
Okay.
Spelled, for some reason, Yggsessey instead of how you'd think.
And it's equal to the Nereid.
That's why. Because Yggdrasil, with a Y, in the Nereid, is the narrator in this book. So that's why it's called the Yggsey. Thank you.
And the book opens with the ghost of Rudolph Valentino smoking a cigar in a little girl's bedroom.
A cheap cigar.
Yes.
You'd think he would have had a better cigar, but, you know, who's to account for the tastes of the departed? He's a ghost.
Yeah. And the premise of the story is that somebody is stealing the great ghost of Los Angeles.
More or less. You know, I mean, stories have premises because you sort of have to. I see no real reason to read fiction other than pleasure. I've always thought that plots were a crutch, but, you know, you sort of expected to include them. So, yes, the great ghosts of Los Angeles are going somewhere. And Yggsey, who sort of lives in an old hotel that's chock full of ghosts, notices this.
Yeah. It sounds like a wonderful old eight-story place, as a matter of fact.
It's based on a real place I lived that's still there, but I think it's not a hotel anymore.
When you lived in Los Angeles?
I lived in Los Angeles.
Right.
Let me tell you about this. We moved there from Chicago when I was, I don't know, eight, mm-hmm. and lived there for a while. And my parents never actually took to it. It was like a vacation that went on too long. And they were kind of miserable. They spent all their time looking for other people from Chicago. And finally we went home. And they wanted to sort of like forget the whole experience. And so, I was, of course, by this time around 13 or 14, turned loose in the streets of Chicago, a great city. I was perfectly happy to forget all about where I'd been because where I was so interesting. So then as a writer, I tended to set stories in Chicago or some fictional analog that was really Chicago.
Yeah.
And then at one point I started fooling with a story where a Chicago family moves to L.A. as mine did. And there was a lot of funny incident about that. And then I started to dredge up my own personal real experiences of Los Angeles, which was a fantastic place to be a kid.
Yeah.
Because it's full of actors who will talk to a kid as though he's an adult if the kid will just talk to them. And lots of people who are eccentric, creative, and immature, and lots of weird things going on to enjoy at all times. The more I remembered, and then I began doing a little light research, the more I was enchanted. And basically, the Yggsey is leftover stuff. I wasn't ready to say goodbye to Los Angeles mm-hmm. or these kids that I had found there that were in the Nereid, a great book.
There, and I wonder if you're aware of it. To me, as a interested reader, there seems to be an awful lot of food in this book.
Awful lot of food?
Food, yeah.
Why would that be? I don't know. I must have some sort of a predilection for food. it's a literary device, Scott. As you know, I'm extremely ascetic. I live mainly on bean sprouts and distilled water. But I use the food as a kind of analog for food.
For example, there's a reference to shoofly pie.
Yes.
I've heard of it for years. You give it an endorsement in the book. What is shoofly pie?
It's sticky. I know that. I once had some.
Yeah.
It's an experience. I did not make a note that I wish to repeat anytime soon or ever. Don't go and order shoofly pie, not that you probably can, on my say-so.
Oh, all right. Well, you make it sound attractive in the book. Magical, let's put it that way.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of writing fiction. You can make quotidian things seem interesting. And the thing I'm writing now talks a lot about Nesselrode pie, which I have also sampled, and it's fairly disgusting, but not to read about it the way I write. Mm.
Did you, when you set out to write this story, did you... You write about ghosts.
Yes.
Did you have to inform yourself a lot about how ghosts are supposed to be? Now, your ghosts are very personable, it must be said.
Most ghosts I have met are very nice, very regular. Kind of person you'd like to maybe go out and have some shoofly pie with and maybe do a little bit of light haunting.
Well, I raise the matter because, of course, just saying ghost will chill some people.
Well, you know, we all have prejudices. We have to get over them.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about America, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
We can change and overcome our prejudices.
There you are.
Can we read some of this? Would you like that?
I have no objection. Would you like to read with me? That would be a big honor.
Yes, that would be an honor for me.
Do you have any selection that appeals to you?
As a matter of fact, which one did I mark here? Chapter 23, The Day After Halloween.
Chapter 23. And where do you want to start?
I mentioned Harry Houdini earlier. You know all about him, do you?
He was a magician on the stage, I said.
And an escape artist. The kind who can get out of ropes and handcuffs and things, Nettie said.
He was world famous, Melvin said. He drew huge crowds wherever he performed. Audiences would sit still for an hour or 2 hours while he worked his way out of ropes and handcuffs in a canvas mail bag placed inside a trunk, which was then bound up in chains and padlocks and placed behind a screen. Hundreds of kids worldwide suffocated to death or at least got nasty rope burns trying to imitate his tricks.
And people would just sit there waiting for him to get out, I asked.
Well, there would be a band playing, Melvin said.
For 2 hours? Nettie asked.
Sometimes.
Must have been some good band, I said.
He would also do things like hang upside down by his feet and get out of a straitjacket into chains. Or he would be tied and chained up and put into a giant milk can with full of water and have to get out before he was drowned.
At least that'd take less than 2 hours, I said.
People had a different idea of what was entertaining back then, Melvin said.
I guess.
And he had a great and abiding interest in the afterlife. When his mother died, he wanted to contact her. In those days, mediums and spiritualists were popular, and people would hold seances trying to talk to the dead. Houdini went to a few of those, but being a professional magician, he easily saw through the tricks the mediums used to convince people they were getting messages from their dead relatives. So Houdini started exposing mediums. He would arrive in a city and go in disguise to the most popular medium. Then he would do a big expose in the newspaper showing how they used research and Confederates to find out things about people who were coming to the seance and all kinds of magicians' illusions to make it seem like there were spirits talking. The funny thing is that after he had done this for a while, the mediums would beg him to expose them because after he left town, their business would quadruple because they had been in the newspaper. Never mind that the story had told that they were frauds. People would go to them anyway.
That's the most interesting thing you've told us yet.
Isn't it? Anyway, the whole time Houdini was exposing mediums, he was hoping to meet a legitimate one so he could really contact his mother or just anybody actually dead. He never found one. Before he himself died, he had made all kinds of arrangements with his wife and his friends. He was going to try to get a signal to them from the other side. They had code words worked out so no fake medium could claim to have gotten in touch with him, and to this day they hold the seance every Halloween, which is the day he died, and try to get in touch with him. Now, here's the part I like. He has been a fairly popular ghost around Hollywood for years and done some quite good haunting. I've seen him myself any number of times in the ghostly parade, always escaping from something or other, but he is yet to show up at one of those seances they hold in his honor.
And now he's gone missing, Nettie said?
Yep.
And the story you just told us has something to do with how ghosts have been disappearing and Halloween coming up, I asked.
Well, no, not necessarily, Melvin said. I just think it's interesting.
Oh, so what is it you started out to tell us before you went off into the life and death of Houdini?
Oh, right. Dia de los Muertos, Melvin said.
Beg pardon?
Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, Melvin said.
It's Saturday. Isn't that just Mexican Halloween, I asked?
No, it's better, Melvin said. I suggest you go down to Alvera Street and find out all about it.
Well, Daniel, I think that sets out some of the premise of the story, even if it is, as you say, a mere prop.
Well, you see, here's the thing. The selection that you chose to read from is what I consider a raisin.
Okay.
Yes.
A raisin is what you try and look for when you bite into the oatmeal cookie?
That or in the rice pudding, you know. I like to mangle a metaphor, salt the story with raisins. I like to throw in little stuff, sometimes factual,
yeah.
Sometimes made up, sometimes grossly mishandled and misinterpreted by D. Pinkwater, and the reader writes to me years later and says, no fooling, that book I read of yours when I was a miserable 11-year-old, it turned out there really was somebody called Lord Buckley. And I found his record in an old record bin. And I would say to that, of course, isn't that the bending end?
Oh. Listen, illustrations of this book are by Caleb Brown. I know that name, don't I?
Yes. You know, this is why people should buy the book.
For the illustrations by Caleb Brown?
Yeah, because he's really good.
Well, you're really good, too. But yes,
yeah, really good, but it's just prose. But, I mean, these are pictures. You can look at them.
Caleb Brown has illustrated books that you and I have read together on our show, haven't we?
We have done a number of books of his on the radio program, and ultimately he and I met. It was inevitable because, you know, we both haunt the same kinds of hock shops, you know, places like that. And he did the cover for the Netty ad, which is quite a work of art, and the cover and interior art for the Igasi. And this is a big honor for me because the guy is really a genius.
Daniel, do you test market your book with children?
With children?
Yeah.
You mean those small, sticky people?
What? That's... Certainly my daughters qualify, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they're welcome to read, but, you know, I don't see why I should have to cater to their whims. And,
Our daughters love your books, you know.
Well, there you are.
Daniel Pinkwater talking about his new book, The Igasi, with a Y. I'm Scott Simon.
I'm Daniel Pinkwater.
Thanks for being with us.